Welcome to the Think Computer's weekly tech podcast. This is episode 185, and this episode is brought to you by Amazon. If you go to thinkcomputers.org/Amazon and happen to purchase something, that gives us a little kickback and, of course, helps the podcast keep on going. With me is my co-host, Derek. What's up, Derek?
Yo, what's going on?
Not much, man. We're in the middle of Prime Day. How much time's left? They have the timer on the top of the website.
It's counting down. Let me
bring it. Yeah, 11 hours left on Prime Day, which is pretty much, if you're in the Amazon ecosystem, whether you use Alexa or, you know, you have an Amazon device, you're looking to upgrade, like if you use a Kindle or something like that, it's a time to get a new one because they're so cheap. Everything is pretty much, and there she goes. And everything is pretty much half off, which is pretty awesome. Yeah. Along with, like, every company has it. Like, most companies that we've seen are doing, like, 30% off deals, which is pretty good as well. Have you bought anything the past day or so?
Oh, dude, have I? I didn't buy too much that was actually on sale, but I've already been building up to buying a new monitor for editing, specifically for editing photos. So I just ended up, I was hoping there was going to be a deal. There didn't end up being a Prime deal, but I found what I wanted and I bought a BenQ monitor that's, really specific to editing. So that's sweet. But I've also been putting off building a NAS. So Synology had, do they still have that on sale?
Probably.
Two bays, actually all their NASs I think are on sale, right?
I think at least there was a select number of them, but there was a 4-bay and a 2-bay I know that were on sale.
Yeah, so there's a couple different 4-bays and a couple different 2-bays. The big difference between the two is the memory. And then obviously the bays. But yeah, so the 2-bay 512 megabyte is $119 bucks, $50 off. So that was good to save on that. And then following our boy Ryan's recommendation, what did I get? It's a Western Digital Easy Store, and then you which is an external drive, right? You take it out of the case, you shuck it, following Reddit's instructions or YouTube, and it's a Western Digital white label or black or red drive. And so that's good for storage. So I got a couple of those, which are like,
They're $139 for the 8 terabyte.
$129 for the 8 terabyte. Best Buy, actually. And then, which I think they might be $139 on Amazon right now.
Okay, gotcha.
But they're regularly like $230 or something like that. So they're like $100 bucks off that way. So so I got that coming, and I got I followed Bob's recommendation, and I picked up a 25-foot cable from Amazon Basics. So a USB to USB-C to mini, so that I can take photos, do live photos with it.
Oh, that's cool. Actually, that's really cool. I didn't really buy a whole lot of tech stuff. So Amazon Basics, which is like Amazon's brand for everything,
right?
All of that stuff's on sale. So I picked up like a big ass thing of batteries, AAA batteries for like remotes and stuff around the house. So I got a pack of 36 of those. I bought my girlfriend new Bluetooth headphones for the gym. She always loses and breaks hers. So those were on sale. I bought a 50-foot hose for the yard. That was also on sale.
Nice.
And then I bought a Fire TV stick because they're half off. And
$25 or $15 version?
The $25 version.
Okay, 4K.
Which is the 4K. Yeah. It's actually, I didn't even know this. I actually got it today. I ordered it yesterday, got it today.
Really?
This one, the Fire Stick 4K, the remote now will control your TV. I lose remotes. They just get lost. And the girlfriend loses remotes all the time. I'm like, where'd you put the remote? She's like, I don't know. So the remote that comes with this will control your TV, and it can control other devices, which is nice. Because you only need one remote. You know what I mean? You're on the Fire TV stick, but you want to, you know, just turn the volume up, and you got to find the other remote.
Yeah, it's annoying.
It's just one remote. So that was pretty cool. But besides like the stuff that we ordered, I think there was a lot of really good tech deals and like, typically they're like, but I mean, the biggest one for me was the, Ryzen 7 2700X.
Oh yeah.
It was $199. That's the lowest it's ever been. It's kind of, since the 3000 series launched, it was floating around like $280, I think, or something like that. Obviously, the normal price was $329, but I think it was like between $250 and $280, something like that. But $199, there was a good amount of X470 boards for $100.
Jeez.
And memory for, I mean, you can get memory pretty cheap anyways. There were some memory deals, power supply deals. Like, you could build a pretty legit system for around $1,000. Like a good one.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean?
GPU and everything.
Yeah. A decent amount of Radeon cards, the 500 series, were on sale. There were, Zotac had some deals on RTX cards. They had a 2088. They had a 2080 Ti, a 2080, a couple other cards that were, like, lower than they normally are. Not, like, crazy deals, but still, like, if you were looking to build a PC, there was a lot of deals, and they're still going on.
Nice.
You know, and a lot of these pre-built companies, CyberPower, they had, like, $200 to $400 off their systems, which are really, like, if you think about it, the price, and if you put all the components together, it's a really good deal, too.
Mm-hmm.
So just a lot of good tech deals. I didn't, you know, the big thing, like, they had some TV deals, but they weren't, like, crazy. I still have a crappy TV, and I've been looking to get one, but there wasn't any TV deals that jumped out to me. But just a good, like, good time to stock up on Amazon devices, and a good time to just, like, get extra stuff that you might need, like, around the house. Like, I needed a hose. I've been looking at getting a hose, and a hose was on sale. Like, you know what I mean?
That's what it is. Yeah.
And it's the same one that I looked at before that was $30, and it was $17. So, good deal for me.
And, you know, ultimately, and we were talking about this just before we started recording, the best part about Amazon Prime Day is that you can go and buy all this stuff. Maybe you got a little impulsive, and you get all kinds of regrets. It's Amazon. You just return it.
Yeah.
It's not going to cost you anything.
So if you're listening to this and it's still Prime Day, which if you're one of the first listeners, you'll definitely, it will still be Prime Day. Check out the deals. There's a lot of good stuff. And this makes really good gifts too. Like stocking stuffers, like a Fire Stick is perfect stocking stuffer. I give it to a lot of people for holidays because it's cheap. And it's like, it's useful. It's something that I always like to give gifts that are very useful to people. And a Fire Stick's useful. It just is. You know what I mean? So, yeah. So, let's jump into our reviews, the stuff that we actually reviewed. And I finished taking a look at two X570 motherboards. We'll start with the ASRock X570 Tai Chi. We know the Tai Chi boards from ASRock to be the best kind of like value for your money. You're getting a lot of great features for a good value. So this board is $300. Which puts it kind of like right in the middle of the X570 boards. Typically, the higher end boards are more of like the 359, 369. The lower end boards are like 220, 230. So this is kind of right in the middle. But it has all, like, when you look at the high end boards, the ones that are, you know, $360 to $400, they have the same features that this board does. So the one is Wi-Fi 6, so you're getting 802.11ax Wi-Fi, and you're getting Bluetooth 5.0 on this. You're also getting three PCI Express 4.0 M.2 slots. And I do have to say, this is the best looking Tai Chi board that I've seen from ASRock. It is sexy. They've done a lot of RGB lighting, but I still don't think it's overdone. It's quite good, but it's the most RGB I've seen on a Tai Chi board too. But I think it works really well, and it's really good. And it's just a solid performer overall. Like I really like this board, 14 phase VRM. It's just a good board overall for me. I really liked it. There are a couple things that was kind of bothersome. The location of the internal, USB 3.2 Gen 2 port sits right in line with the top PCI Express slot. So if you do install a graphics card, you're not going to be able to use that port.
Yeah.
Not like for me, it wasn't because we use this on a test bench. But if you have a new case that has that port and you want to use it, you won't be able to use, you're either going to have to not use it or move your graphics card down to the second slot, which of course you don't want to do either for the most part.
No, it looks terrible.
Is
there an angled connector for that?
There might be. I don't know. Maybe,
yeah. Like an adapter, maybe.
Yeah, or something.
Maybe, something you'd have to look into. Let me look. It would just be USB, right? Well, USB.
It's the that connector, the whatever
you call it. Yeah, so it's gonna be pinned for that specifically.
Yeah, yeah. But that's kind of like the only thing I really found bad with this. This has power and reset on the board. It has a postcode display. Again, those are the features that are in higher end boards. The only thing that's weird about this, and we saw this on their B450 board too, is that in the BIOS there's no easy mode, which is kind of weird.
Hmm.
They had it on their Z3. There's no easy mode.
Huh.
It just you just kind of go right into the BIOS, which is fine for people like us, because we know where our settings are.
Yeah, we're not gonna use it anyways. Actually, yeah, annoying for people like us because we don't want that extra click. But
But you can set it to go into not go into easy mode in most BIOSes these days. But just not having it is kind of weird. I think Ryzen 3000 series is a lot of people are building their first PCs with this. Just like to have XMP there, to have your boot, boot drives and things like that. Just would be nice to have it. And again, they had it on their Z390 board, so I don't understand why it's not on X570. It's kind of weird. Yeah. But overall, I think this is a great board for the money. You're getting everything that you need. A lot of stuff that you don't need is not there. You know, it kind of brings up the price of other boards too. But for $300, I think it's a solid board. I think it's a solid X570 board. Like I said, the only issue really that I had... is that the that connector is right in line with that slot, so if you use
it does look like there is a red angle adapter.
Okay,
I'm having trouble actually locating one, but according to
it
some
would
places,
just if they would have made if they would have made that port like the SATA ports that are at a 90 degree angle, you wouldn't have the problem. The only other thing that might bother some people is that the entire bottom section of the board is a heatsink for the M.2s and the chipset. And if you want to install an M.2 drive, you have to remove the whole thing. Whereas in some other boards, you might not even have to take your graphics card out to install an M.2. Here, you have to take out that whole piece. That can get annoying down the line, but I mean, your first install, it's not going to be a big deal. They do include the screwdriver as well, which is a plus to take that off.
Yeah, I see that as being troublesome, though, for first-timers, like, doing anything like that. Because it looks almost like you're breaking it, you know?
Sort of,
A little, like, because there's thermal pads and stuff on there, like, and it looks like they stuck right to the heat spreader, but first-timers don't want to deal with that.
Yeah. So that's kind of like the only issues. But like I said, for $300, you're getting top-end features. Good overclocking, solid board all around. Yeah. So
I love that there's actually, maybe it's not an actual gear, but it looks like an actual gear in there.
You know, if that moved,
oh my gosh,
that would have been awesome. Yeah, it's like an actual piece. It's like an actual piece in the heatsink.
Mm-hmm.
That looks like a gear, but it doesn't move. I really wish it would have moved, but that would have been kind of.
Somebody needs to mod that. It would not be too much of a stretch to make that work.
Yeah, so that's cool too. So if you're a fan of the Tai Chi, like all the gears and stuff like that, the board looks amazing. It's the best Tai Chi board that I've ever seen.
Yeah, much better than previous generations, Intel or AMD.
Yeah, for sure. So definitely check out that review. And then I also took a look at the MSI Meg X570 Ace. This also sits at the top end. So this is basically MSI's second best board in their X570 line, right below the Godlike. This board, I believe, is $369 or $379. So again, that top tier.
Yeah.
And it's a nice looking board. I think this is one of the best looking X570 boards that I've seen. It just has really great lines. They've kind of done it really well, at least in my opinion. And again, top end features, like the ASRock board, you're getting Wi-Fi 6, you're getting 3 M.2 slots. Of course, all of those have the heat sinks on top of them. And with this one, you're getting 2.5 gig LAN too. So that's a plus. So a lot of high-end features here. All of the slots on this board are metal reinforced, so the RAM and the The PCI Express slots are all metal reinforced with this. This is a really great board too. I really liked it. It's the first motherboard that I've seen that has an infinity window on it, which is on the I/O cover. It looks good. It's just, it's not as impressive as like the one that's in my case.
Just not big obviously enough.
It's just not big enough. There's just not enough room to do it, but I think it's a cool feature. And I think that MSI has never been like crazy RGB. But I think this kind of, this is really cool. It's a cool feature. It's not something you're normally going to see on a board, and I like it. You know what I mean?
Kind of dipping the toe in the water there.
Yeah, it's cool. Yeah. I do like it. This one has a solid power design as well. Dual 8-pin EPS connector. So if you want to do the overclocking, you can. The only issue that I had with this board was the BIOS. The BIOS was pretty laggy to me. And when I went to overclock, it would not save my settings. Like, the settings were saved in the BIOS, but when I went into Windows, it was just running the stock speeds on the processor.
That's cute.
The other settings, when it came to, you know, like setting my XMP, those were all saved fine. Like, it was just when I went to, sometimes, like, if Windows is in, Windows would sometimes go into balance mode, and that sets your processor to, like, its default. Like, I tried everything to get this thing to save the settings. It would not. Luckily, we reviewed this after the launch, so the Ryzen Master software was available that works on 3000 series, and I was able to overclock no problem using that software. But just, you know, you want those settings to be saved in the BIOS. And like I said, when I went to restart, it showed me that my settings were saved like in the BIOS. So I don't know what the deal is with that. Also, their companion software that's on this product page is not working. I had to download it somewhere else on the MSI website. I put a big disclaimer on that page in the review to not download that software because it just doesn't work. And that software puts Windows in balance mode no matter what you do. You can turn it off, and you can even change the registry to have balance mode not be an option, and it still messes it up.
Oh, so, really?
Yeah.
That's annoying.
So, yeah, a little bit, like I said, problems with the BIOS and problems with the software. But I still think, again, very great board. I like the design on this board. I like all the features that you're getting. This only has 4 SATA ports on it, which might be a little bit limiting to some people. Mm-hmm. But I think we're getting, you know, I mean, 4 plus, you're getting 7 total storage ports if you're using all of the M.2s. And that's still 7 drives is a lot.
It's just them committing pretty heavily to the M.2, assuming... I mean, I guess you just don't buy this board if you're going drive heavy.
But yeah, I would say so.
It's a pretty appealing board, though. It's got a lot of cool features.
One thing that you might like on this board is there's an actual dial on the board.
I saw that.
And this dial allows for instant overclocking.
Preset settings or settings you create?
Preset settings.
Okay.
But it's still nice. Like, you don't, like, if you're weird about overclocking, you don't have to, like, you can just, you don't even have to install software. You don't have to do it. You don't have to go in the BIOS. You just turn the dial. That's all. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like crazy. It's not crazy. I think the max is the base frequency plus 700 megahertz. Like, it's not a lot, but it still gives you,
makes you feel like you're doing something.
Yeah, it's cool. I like it. Just like the other ones, this one does have the postcode display too. USB 3.2 Gen 2. I mean, like I said, it has everything you want in an X570 board.
Yeah.
The other two that we reviewed did have those like back plates. This one does not.
I would say if I'm gonna be critical, well, I'll start with things I like. I love the heat pipe that's all around the VRMs and then all the way down into the chipset heatsink. I love that. That's like old school, and it brings me right back. I love it. And it's obviously going to be good cooling because it's got the little fan down there and everything. It looks awesome. If I was to pick something I didn't really like, I don't like that they've got the power and reset on the bottom. I prefer it in the upper right-hand corner where you can more easily get to it in most cases. You get a GPU in there and it's down in the bottom of the case. It can just be really hard to get to if you need it. Not that you need it most of the time, but you know, I feel like that can be a problem. And then placing that, that butt or the, Nah, right next to the reset button seems kind of sketch, but
yeah, that's a little.
You get clumsy fingers, you're gonna maybe not be too happy with yourself.
Yeah. I think, like I said, I think out of all three boards that we've got to review so far, they've all been good. Like,
yeah, seems like
there's, I mean, motherboards are kind of hard to mess up, but we see, you know, and the thing is, we were thankful enough to get all boards that are kind of in the same price range ish. The ASRock board's a little bit lower price, but the Gigabyte board is like $359. This is $369. And then the ASRock board's $300. So all in the same price range. We're looking at almost the same feature set in all of them too. You know, when it comes to three boards, I do like the Gigabyte board the best, just because I love the power design and I was able to get 100 megahertz more overclocking on that board. I just like that board the best. If it was money, I would go with the ASRock board because it has all the features of all the other boards minus the 2.5 gig LAN, which I don't have a router that supports that. As most people don't. I don't think either. But you still get Wi-Fi 6 and everything with that. All three of them have PCI Express 4.0 slots, all three. You know, three. BIOSes are good on all of them. Just this one's a little bit laggy, but that's not a huge deal. This one has the most reinforced slots as far as everything goes. So you have the RAM and the PCI Express. And it just comes down to maybe lighting and some other stuff, but the feature sets are very close. And I think all of these had a good amount of fan headers too. I think the Gigabyte board had 7, the ASRock board had 6, and I think this one has 6 too. So you have a lot of, like, if you're looking to outfit an entire case and use the motherboard as your fan hub, you should be pretty good on most of these as well.
do people do that?
Not as much anymore because, you know, these RGB fan kits, they come, like, if you get a 3 fan kit, it comes with a controller and stuff like that for the most part. You know, but still, it's nice to have the option, right?
I mean, I never used them because I thought it looked terrible, and so I was wondering if people do now. Because they've really beefed them up, though. Like, the power delivery on them is much better than it used to be.
In the control, I mean, you get most of the time, in all these BIOSes, you get full fan curve that you can set in the BIOS itself, and of course their software as well, too. So, you know, but I think it's great for people who maybe, you know, like, just want to add a couple fans or something. I mean, you don't need a controller anymore. Like, yeah. I remember there being like 2 on motherboards. Like,
yeah,
you know,
like 4 was like, oh wow, what are all these for?
Yeah, so like I said, all three of these are great. It kind of comes down to which board you like, maybe which company you like better, what RGB you're looking for, maybe stuff like that.
Which level of subtlety you want.
Yeah, you know, but I think they're all really good, and this is really impressive to me. I know, again, we were lucky enough to get like the higher end boards, but I've been really impressed with X570 boards so far. As I talked about before, kind of like in line, if not better, than the Z390 counterparts, which is good.
Yeah, and as they should be because they're super expensive for what they are.
Yeah, yeah. So we have all those reviews out. I did a video on the Gigabyte board. Videos are coming for the ASRock board and the MSI board. I did do BIOS videos for all three too. So if you're somebody who you're going to be going into the BIOS, I've done a walkthrough on all three too. So you guys can check that out. A lot of cool stuff there. And we'll get to Case Mod Friday. And we have a scratch build, which I think is very impressive. It's from Albert Design, who we've never featured before. And this is his first custom water cooling build. And I think for his first custom water cooling build, this is pretty impressive. Custom made case. He actually ordered the parts kind of made, like, 3D modeled this and then got a machine shop to kind of machine these parts for him.
It's kind of a half build, but good for him still, being his first time.
Yeah, first time. You have hard tubing in there, which I think is pretty impressive for first time.
It's not only hard tubing, it's chrome. That's even harder. Metal hard tubing is much more difficult to work with than the plastic stuff.
Yeah, I think it's a good build overall. It's a micro ATX build, or is it mini? No, it's micro. Micro ATX build in there, and I just think it's good. And it's interesting. He used Fantex res. He uses EK block, and he uses Bits Power fittings. I kind of like that because a lot of times we see somebody go like all EK or all Bits Power or
whatever. Yeah, but like you gotta choose the best of what each company makes, and I think that's what you're looking at here. The res is less the best and more like what will look the best, but I love that Fantex res. It's like a what have we ever come up with a definitive name for what you actually call that when they sandwich the acrylic and there's cutouts in it?
No.
Well, we should probably figure that out.
Yeah, we should make a name. But yeah, I just think it's a good build. I found this one on builds.gg, and it was just like, it kind of caught my eye. And then when I was like, you know, they put a little description and said it was his first custom water cooling build, I was like, man, that's a lot better than I would ever do on my first one, I feel.
I mean, this is tough. Talk about asking for trouble, like the overcomplicating your first build, but it's really cool. I really love that he's got like, what is that? 3/4 inch acrylic mid plate. And then he's got lighting inside it, which it's like a smoked acrylic, so it looks fantastic.
Yeah, it looks great. It's just like I said, it's just a good build overall. So Albert Zina, hopefully you keep on doing builds, because this one for your first one is very impressive. I really, really like it. It's kind of like the board just kind of floats in there because it's all acrylic.
Yeah, it's old. It's so old school. Like, remember when acrylic cases were like the thing? You had to have that.
I really like that he used the chrome tubing for like what's kind of being shown, but then like there are some clear pieces too, so you can see the coolant.
Yeah, the behind the tray pieces that connect behind. Yeah, it looks cool. His name is what? It's
Albert Design.
Albert Design. I imagine he's got to be some sort of an engineer or something. To just pull this off out of nowhere, like you got to have some sort of like design skill, right?
Yeah, and one thing I didn't notice...
Oh, he's an industrial designer. There it is.
Yeah, there you go. is that the tubes coming off the graphics card, they go back across the top of the graphics card. I don't think I've seen something like that.
Look back at this now.
Yeah. If you go to the second page of photos and you go to maybe the last one, you can kind of see it.
The last one? Oh, yeah, you mean like he angles it back over the top of it instead of like... down and around.
Yeah. Kinda, I
you
like
might
that.
Be right. That's yeah, good. It does look good. It follows, if you notice, it follows the line from the mid plate.
Yeah. It does. Wow. Yeah, definitely. Industrial designer.
Yeah. Sure. And then that actually mirrors the CPU line, too, up at the top.
Yeah.
So he knew what he was doing.
Yeah. Very, very cool. So, to check this one out. I like I said, I really like this. I think he did a really great job on this one, for sure.
I don't think we've ever he's uses Be Quiet Silent Wings in there for fans. I don't think I've really seen anybody use those in a build, especially for radiators, so that's cool.
Like I said, I'd like the diversity of parts, you know, when it comes to like big modders, they get like a sponsor like EK, and it's like they're kind of required to use all their parts, and it's cool to see somebody build their own that's of this quality and like mix in different parts that you might not typically see, you know what I mean?
Yeah, this is what you see, like if you were gonna go do research on forums and stuff, this is what you would come up with probably for the like the best of parts without any brand loyalty, I would say.
Yeah, I agree. Definitely check that one out. I really like that one. And we'll move on to news for the week, and we have some very interesting stories, I would say. First is that AMD killed off the Radeon 7 5 months after it was released.
Murdered a baby.
Probably the shortest shelf life we've ever seen for a graphics card. Now, Anthony from Tweaktown was telling me that, like, this was the way it was supposed to be. It was just mainly supposed to be a stopgap. They initially, like, made 5,000? Like, mm-hmm. That's all they were making. Everybody thought it was going to be, like, you know. But with the introduction of the 5700 series, it kind of cannibalizes this card. And it was just, like, a stopgap to have something available in the time before the 5700 series was ready.
I do kind of feel like we knew that. Like, they might have said, I think they said something along those lines when they launched it, that, like, we still knew the next series was coming. So I was almost confused at CES when they did launch this, in that, like, I was like, wait, what is this card? Because I didn't think we were up to that next, you know, series yet, and yet we're getting a card. And NVIDIA just announced theirs. What's going on? And, yeah, so, yeah, it was just obviously it was an attention grab. I mean, really, yes, more than anything. It was not a good card.
Now, here's the thing. Now, if there was only 5,000,
yeah,
does this make this a collector's item? It's a collector's item.
It is, yeah.
Yeah. I like that aspect of it.
Yeah.
But I also think that this is good on AMD being like, this was stopgap. We're not going to continue to sell this thing. We're not going to continue to make it. Like, we acknowledge that this is what it was, and we're on to the next thing.
You mean, right? You think it's good on them to not, like, put all these different product lines into the market, into their own lineup, and confuse the consumer?
And not keep on selling something that,
yeah,
that they don't, like, they need don't. To sell. Like, they just killed it. Like, they killed it off. Like, it just, yes, it's done.
Yeah.
Like, I like that, because we've seen companies sell products for years that they shouldn't be selling, if that makes sense.
Yeah, you know, for sure.
So I like that. I like that on them. But again, shortest shelf life we've seen for a major graphics card. And a collector's item now. So if you have one, apparently it's a collector's item, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, if you go and find the display they had for it at CES, that block of acrylic.
All the reviewers got sent one of those,
too. Did they?
So
that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, if you have one of those, I would keep it.
Yes.
For sure. So, talking about AMD Radeon stuff, a Radeon RX 5600 appeared online in the CompuBench database. This is going to basically compete with, like, NVIDIA 1660s, which is expected. I mean, again, this, if you're looking for high-end cards, they're not coming till next generations. So,
yeah.
But if you're looking to not spend, what's the 5700? I think it's 329, or maybe it's lower. I forget. If you're looking to spend between 200 and 300 on a card, and you're an AMD fan, this should be. You know, these cards more than likely are coming. That's another great market for AMD to at least get some market share out of, because it's really big. So this is coming. It was just in that database. It's supposedly the Navi 14 GPU, which has 24 RDNA compute units, each with 64 stream processors, so 1536 stream processors. The GPU is clocked at 1900 megahertz, and based on these specs, again, going to compete with a 1660 series from NVIDIA. Makes sense for AMD. Again, they're not trying to majorly, like, super compete as far as performance, but they're looking to give you a good card at a good price, so we'll see what these turn out to be. No word on when they'll be out, no word on the models or anything like that. It's kind of like early news for this stuff, so.
Yeah. Not much to be super excited about here.
Yeah, now here's the interesting story. According to AMD, when they first announced the RX 5700 series in its pricing, they announced it more expensive on purpose so that NVIDIA would price their super series very aggressively. And this has kind of come to light. There was a report by PC Games Network, and Scott Herkelman of AMD basically said this is what they did. And I kind of, at least for the 5700, I kind of agree, because when we first talked about it on the podcast, I was like, I like the price of the XT, but the 5700, the price I didn't like. You know what I mean? Because it was originally $399 for the 5700 XT, $349 for the 5700, and
no, that's backwards.
I was like,
that's backwards. That's the new price.
Oh, it's $449. So $449 and $379. Yeah. I thought $379 was high.
Yeah.
For what supposedly a 5700 would do, especially compared to 2060 pricing.
They were way overpriced.
Yeah, and obviously a day before their launch, the prices were dropped to $399 for the XT and $349 for the 379. And again, this is a very high-level AMD person who went on the PC Perspective podcast and said that they did this deliberately.
Well, yeah, that's what you do when you want to go start your own rumor or like perpetrate that. What's the point of, like, I get that they have like what they call a strategy for, but what does driving down NVIDIA's cost do for them?
I think what their whole thing was, it would, like, the pricing between the cards is not a lot.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
But NVIDIA's cards are faster.
And yeah, for the most part.
All of the supers are faster.
Well, yeah, as they should be. Yeah. Because they're more expensive.
But barely.
But I think...
AMD drives down the Super Series pricing, right? Because NVIDIA sees what they're supposedly going to price the XT and just the 700 at. So they adjust their pricing lower, not higher, lower. That makes things more difficult for AMD to compete, not better. I don't see this.
I think what it does is it puts the 5700 at the same price as a 2070, where it beats the 2070, maybe by 5 to 10%, but it does at a better price.
But what would coming out, if they would have announced their real pricing, then NVIDIA would have dropped pricing even further?
No. They put out their pricing.
Yeah.
And NVIDIA's like, okay, for the Super Series, instead of making them $150 more than the, like, a 2070 and 2070 Super, instead of making $150 more, it's only going to be like $70 more.
To make them,
you know what I mean?
To make them compete.
Yeah. And make them compete. And then they drop the price of the normal card. So it's under the thought price. Under the initial initial 449 of the card. And then AMD is like, well, we're going to drop it even more. And then NVIDIA's kind of stuck. Now we just drop these cards.
I don't buy it. He contradicts himself in his state. Like, the theory contradicts itself. I don't. Like, he says that they did that to cause NVIDIA to drive the price down because it's so expensive for them to close it down, you know, to shrink their margins. Okay, that's a good strategy because that eliminates funds that will be available in the future. But wouldn't you price lower so then NVIDIA will price, like, they know they have more performance, so they'll, like, price just as high as they absolutely can?
I mean, maybe. I don't know. I didn't have time to read the entire thing. Yeah. All I know is that decently high level AMD employees said that this was their tactic all along.
Yeah.
I would suggest, I didn't have time to listen to the podcast from a PC Perspective where they had him on.
Yeah.
To talk about it. Yeah. So we have a link to the PC Games Network article that has all that. So I would just, you know, go through that, and they have the podcast.
Which is a decent podcast, too, if you don't listen to it. So.
Yeah, yeah. So definitely check that out. When I first read this story, I was like, this is the old days. This is the ATI versus NVIDIA thing, where, like, ATI would, like, get in, like, physical fights with NVIDIA people at, like, QuakeCon. Like, that's, like, back in the day. Like, that's what it reminds me of. So it's kind of funny. It's the competition, right?
Yeah.
And it's like... this is what we need in the GPU market. We need healthy, I don't know if this is healthy, but we need competition like that where, like, maybe the companies hate each other.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
That's a good thing.
What we need, though, on top of the competition, is for the AMD to actually have a competitive part.
Yeah, I agree.
So, I mean, this to me sounds like a little brother that claims he's playing a game that he's not even in.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, so we'll, like I said, we'll, if we hear any more on that, I like the competition aspect of this whole thing. And, like, even if it's not true, it still, like, kind of brings that drama to the whole thing, which I like. And I think we need more of it in this space, so.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I would just prefer a good developed product.
Yeah, yeah. One that the stock cooling solution works good on.
Yeah.
That's the biggest thing with that part. Because the part...
Well, and the drivers.
It, it, Yeah, the part itself technically works. Like, it technically is better than a 2070 at a lower price, but it's the cooler sucks, it's hot, and it has driver issues. So, like, why deal with that when you can just get another part for, like, a couple bucks more that works better? You know what I mean? But anyways, yeah. Talking about NVIDIA, you know, their Super Series that they obviously released kind of in reaction to the NVIDIA, to the 5700 series, was initially the RTX 2060 Super, RTX 2070 Super, and RTX 2080 Super. Mm-hmm. Those are the cards. And a lot of people, there's rumors that there's going to be a 2080 Super. Like, there has to be, right? Like, to bring even more value to that 2080 Ti card. Like, there's going to be a 2080 Ti Super. A lot of people said that it's going to be based on the same die as the Titan. Which kind of made sense, as all of the other cards were based on the same dies as the card in front of it.
Yeah, it's like the only place they could pull apart from to
match. But this looks like it's not happening, and it makes sense that it's not happening because...
yeah, they've cannibalized enough of their product line.
Yeah, and the Titan kind of sits on its own up there, and if you're making a part that still is... It's still on the same die and everything like that, even though it might be cut down slightly, it's going to cannibalize that top part. Mm-hmm. And everything like that. So,
well, I mean, all of the other supers basically crushed the original parts. So,
yeah. And Anthony again at Tweaktown, during their event at E3, he talked to, Senior Vice President of NVIDIA's PC business, Jeff Fisher, and he asked when there's going to be a RTX 2080 Ti Super, and he said there's not going to be, basically. So it doesn't look like it's happening. So if you maybe were holding out to get a 2080 Ti Super, it's not going to happen more than likely. So just don't wait around for it. Get a 2080 Super. They were just released, I think, today or yesterday.
Yeah. Where does, without having the graph right in front of me, I think is the 2080 Super is just slightly below the Ti,
I believe. So yes, yeah,
but like significantly cheaper.
Yeah, that's the best thing. And again, this is what competition makes. So we have cards that are like, you know, semi affordable for most people.
Well, I mean, the 2070 Super is actually probably the spot.
Yeah, that's like the best card I would say to get now.
Right on, like. If you've got a relatively decent budget, that's probably the card you want.
Yeah, I would agree with you there. But moving over to CPU stuff, pretty big news for AMD. It looks like AMD Ryzen CPU sales market share has taken over Intel in major Asian Pacific markets, which is pretty impressive.
So that gives it Europe and Asia, right?
I think it's Asian Pacific, so I think it's just like Asia and Japan.
Okay. Yeah.
At least the data that we have is from South Korea and Japan. So Danwa Research, which is run by Danwa, which is one of the largest retailers in South Korea, they put out data on their sales of AMD Ryzen processors versus Intel Core processors. And on the 7th, the day of the launch, AMD was at 28.24% of sales. The next day, the 8th, they jump up to 48.72%. And it goes slightly down to 46%. And then the next day, they're at 51.72%. And then the next day, 53.36%, taking over sales of Intel, which is pretty impressive. Intel, while again, they haven't done a whole lot, and AMD has been pretty strong. As far as like volume, Intel has always sold more, just because a lot of people just still use Intel. I mean, as they should. I mean, they're good parts, and everything like that. But that's kind of that's kind of expected as we see this launch happening, and Intel doesn't have anything for a while.
Well, I mean, you've also the biggest milestone with this launch is that we finally have the full ecosystem. We have the same The boards are equipped with the same features or better features now than Intel. So this is the first time they've been able to boast that.
Yeah. And they showed, because they own the retailer, they showed what people were clicking on as far as like AMD versus Intel parts on the website. Mm-hmm. And it, you know, before the third, people were like, you know, 45% to 54 Intel. And then after, it spiked at 76.95% of people were looking at AMD parts over Intel parts. And they have a nice breakdown of what parts people are buying the most of, which is interesting to see. So actually on the Intel side, it is the i5-9400, which is a you know, mid-range part. But for AMD, the big ones is the Ryzen 7 3700X and the Ryzen 5 3600. Those are the kind of big ones right there.
And the 26 still has a good chunk too.
Yeah, the 26. I mean, like I said, those are good parts. You know, those are decent parts for the price. Yeah. And then second for Intel is the 9700K. So it's cool to see that. And then BCN ranking, they round up major data from outlets in Japan. They reported that AMD Ryzen CPUs have overtaken Intel share, and they sit at 50.5% of sales versus Intel's 49.5%. And you can see that graph.
Yeah,
it's just like just Intel's going down and AMD's going up.
Yeah. You remember we talked about this early days in the podcast. On the opposite side, it was an Intel dominant, like 70 to 30% or something like that. And we were like, what is AMD ever to do? Well, they figured it out.
On the CPU side, they figured it out. And it's crazy. Like I said, we always talk about this, but like think about 4 years ago, we were on quad core. Yeah. And we had, and we were stuck. I don't know if there were plans to ever get out of quad core.
No.
Because according to Intel, quad core is all you needed. You know what I mean?
I mean, they're sort of right still. in gaming
and stuff like that. Yes. But like, if you think about it, I mean, how many of us are creating content? How many of us are using Adobe products? Like,
well, that's you know. That is a huge shift that didn't exist back in those days. It is a creator world right now. So
So good for AMD on that. It'd be interesting to see the US numbers on that too, and the Europe numbers and things like that, which I'm sure will come out eventually.
Yeah. I want to guess it's closer maybe towards Intel just due to server sales.
Yeah, I think that Intel was, and this is
that just Intel, mainstream?
Yeah, so that's Intel Core versus AMD Ryzen specifically. That doesn't count any high-end desktop. It doesn't count any server parts, you know, any of that stuff. And you think about too, like the what is that called, the market share, the Intel's volume versus AMD is like insane. Like the volume of sales that they do compared to AMD, overall, it's like, or their market cap is like 280 some billion versus like Intel's, which is like 3 or something. It's like somebody, when everybody was like, oh, Intel's done, and somebody's like, look at the market cap, they're not even close.
Yeah, you know? Like everybody's like, oh, they're gonna close. No.
And you have to think about it, it's not just the processor stuff. Like Intel, all their technologies, like all of these X570 boards use Intel Wi-Fi. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like, it's just all that kind of stuff, like the technologies that Intel owns. Intel's not going anywhere. They just are kind of stopped right now on the CPU side of things because somebody came in the AMD and was like, we need to change this, and they did, and now there's competition there.
Yeah,
but it's not to the point where Intel's like, we're closing shop. That will never happen.
There's probably a huge momentum shift in this market specifically.
Yes. Talking about, you know, Ryzen stuff, Ryzen 3000 series stuff and X570 motherboards. Of course, the big reason to get an X570 motherboard or to build a new Ryzen system is PCI Express 4.0. Mm-hmm. Especially when it comes to storage. I mean, if you're a content creator, faster storage just saves you time and even gaming. I mean, loading like a single player game on a PCI Express 4.0 M.2 SSD is super fast.
You can be first one on map every time.
Yeah. Yeah. So it looks like Asus is enabling PCI Express 4.0 on motherboards, on 400 series motherboard. Yeah. So if you guys don't know, the PCI Express controller is on the chip itself. For the most part, there are some, like, you are getting PCI Express 4.0 on the chipset as well, but most of the slots or lanes or whatever you want to call them are on the chip itself,
which is why they're so fast.
Yes, and if the slot on the board on a 400 series board is
wired to the socket,
is wired to the socket. And you're running a 3000 series chip, it will work at PCI Express 4. What Asus has done is enabled a toggle in the BIOS to make this possible. And the guys over at MyDrivers, they tested this out with a PCI Express 4.0 SSD. And yeah, it did those speeds. And those speeds are not possible on a PCI Express 3.0 slot. They're just not.
Yeah.
So that's awesome. So for all of those who were complaining about pricing, you technically could get a 400 series board, a B450 or an X470, and as long as you have the right BIOS that this toggle's enabled, you can enable the toggle and you have PCI Express 4.0. Now the things to keep in mind is that if you're doing multiple graphics, they're not going to run at X4 because usually at least one of the slots is wired to the chipset. Is same with the M.2. Probably one of your M.2s is wired to the CPU. The other ones are wired to the chipset. Mm-hmm. Something to think about. Also, at least in my experience with X570 boards, they're like thicker, and they say that has to do with the stability of PCI Express 4.0. In the signal strength and things like that. I don't know how true that is either. So Asus says you could run into stability issues if you're running a 400 series board and you enable this. But if it works, it works, and it doesn't matter. If it doesn't work, you just disable it and go back to 3.0. It looks like AMD is pretty pissed about this. AMD didn't block PCI Express 4.0 on older chipsets. They just discouraged manufacturers from enabling it. And Asus has always been one to not listen because they showed that you could run older Intel parts on older boards that they said you couldn't. So it looks like AMD might block it in an upcoming microcode update. So if you have one of these boards and you want to buy a new chip, make sure you leave it on the BIOS that's in the MyDrivers article. But it's pretty cool. I love little hacks like this and stuff. So
Cool. I mean, I don't think you should make your purchases based on this, though.
No.
Because I think, like, as you said, they're going to block it, and maybe there'll be a hack around that. I don't know, but it just doesn't seem like a... If you've already got it, but why would you already have a 400 series board and a 3700 or whatever?
Yeah, like...
I don't know.
For the most part, if you're running a 2700X, there's not necessarily a reason to get a 39 or even a 37. Like it.
Yeah, I mean, unless if you are a content creator, it does smash.
Yeah, it does, but is it... I don't know if it's worth that upgrade right now. I mean, again,
now when it's $199 for a 2700X.
Yeah. I mean, but if you're on the last gen, you can make an argument for upgrading, but there's really no reason to. You know what I mean?
I think the argument is Gen 4.
Yeah, the argument's Gen 4, and the argument is going from 8 cores to 12.
Yeah.
If you were doing that upgrade path, yeah. But
8 cores still, is still like, a lot, though.
I mean, for the amount of money you spent on your computer, a year ago, are you really going to spend the same amount again? Like, or more? You know what I mean? It's just, yeah. Pretty cool little hack. I guess you want to call it a hack because a manufacturer feature. Did it. A feature. And what's interesting is that Asus, like, on their Chinese website, they are... advertising PCI Express Gen 4 on their B450 boards, which is hilarious. So AMD's not very happy about it.
It's also funny that that's what, who was it? My drivers used a B450 board. They didn't, it's not that they used like a Crosshair or a Strix or anything. Like, they went for like one of the lower end boards to do the testing on. So, yeah 5,000 megabytes read on a B450. Nice.
Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome.
One side thing that I want to ask you that I kind of popped in my head while we were going over this. I don't like that there's not a specific name for the M.2 solid state drives for PCIe Gen 4. I think there needs to be a specific name for those drives. What do you think?
I agree. I think consumers are dumb. We had this problem when, and I'm actually looking at an ad on our site for Best Buy for the WD Black.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
The original drive was called WD Black, and it was a SATA-based M.2. And then they went to a WD Black NVMe, which was also called WD Black.
Mm-hmm.
And then they went to another WD Black, which was their faster one, which was, I guess, the Gen 3. But they were all called WD Black. So how, as a consumer, do you know what the hell one you're buying unless you like reading?
Especially, you know what I mean? Yeah, like, even somebody that does their research when they get into something, like, you... That's really getting into your research.
Yeah,
so to figure out the differences.
So these should have a name. They should have some type of designation. I know it's going to say a PCI Express Gen 4.0.
Yeah.
It will, but I mean, how could that's also like a lot of like this, like I'm looking at the ad on the website. It's PCI Express 3.0 X4. That can be easily confused with PCI Express 4.0.
Exactly.
Right? Like, yeah, it can be. Yeah. So there needs to be a name. I don't know what you would call it.
Because we've been calling them M.2 drives.
Yeah.
But now there's two types. So like what? M.2 Mark II?
And again, I don't know. I guess the difference when it came, because when M.2s first was introduced, they were SATA based.
Yeah.
And they're still SATA based on a lot of boards, actually.
Yeah.
So like, I guess when we upgraded to PCI Express, it was NVMe. This is an NVMe. M.2, right? So
right, and technically this is like a second gen NVMe.
Yeah. Or third gen, I guess. Because a lot of the first drives were a lot of the first drives were X2. They weren't X4. Like, you know what I mean? It's so confusing. Oh. Yeah, I guess it could be confusing for a lot of people.
Yeah.
There's no standard or there's no name. So I don't think we'll get that.
I think that's actually like as a manufacturer, don't you want to differentiate which of your products is better?
Yeah.
So like somebody come up with some marketing for this. It's a failed marketing piece. So
yeah, I remember on the MSI board they called the ports lightning ports. I'm not sure.
Oh, that's terrible too.
On ASRock, so ASRock's PCI Express 3.0 X4s were called Ultra M.2s, and that made sense. And it was really easy to see which ones weren't Ultra, because they didn't say Ultra on them.
Yeah.
So I don't know what they call them on the new ones. I'm not sure.
Why don't they just call it high speed, though?
Yeah.
Or something like that. Like, when you, like, Lightning, like, do you tell me that's not going to confuse people with, like, Apple stuff?
Yeah. I mean, all the naming's hard.
Yeah.
So I think that
they make too much stuff. That's the problem.
Yeah. And it's again, you could call it, what did you say? High speed. And then what happens when the faster speed comes out?
Oh, faster speed.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. So it's,
well, that one's high speed then.
It's just like USB. I mean, writing these motherboard reviews, it pained me to call USB 3.1 Gen 1, USB 3.2 Gen 1, and to call USB 3.2 or 3.1 Gen 2, USB 3.2 Gen 2. Like, why? Why are we changing these names?
It could be so easy, and yet it's not.
Yeah.
It's difficult to even follow. The USB thing is ridiculous. That one, like, screwed everything up.
Yeah. I agree.
But when you're a reviewer and it's annoying, that's when you know that it was a bad
choice.
And
then you like, you know, you make a video where you're like, yeah, this is USB 3.0, and then they're like, no, on the Asus website it's USB 3.1, and I'm like, yeah, because when I reviewed it, it was USB 3.0, not USB 3.1 Gen 1, and it makes me look stupid, but I wasn't stupid at the time.
Well, what you need to do is go back and remake all your videos.
Oh yeah. Yeah. But anyways, let's get on to what I was talking about earlier about Intel not having anything for a while. Last week we talked about the Comet Lake CPU lineup. Not impressive because it's not 10 nanometer. But we had the full lineup and people were like, this is coming soon because we have a leaked.
Their slide, yeah.
Yeah, the whole slide with everything. So it's ready to go. Like, we'll have it holiday season, right? That makes sense.
Which is no surprise because they've had to die for the past 3 or 4 years.
Yeah. But no, it looks like Comet Lake S is not coming till at least Q1 2020, which is a while to wait still. I think, one, like, wouldn't you want to release for, you know, like, holiday season?
Like an event? Yeah, or like a time when people spend a lot of money.
Yeah, or like people are buying laptops and stuff for like back to school, like, you know.
No.
So that's not coming till 2020. But the bigger news about these leaked slides is that means, like, in this slide, it shows Q1 and Q2 is Comet Lake S. So that means at least until Q3, you're not going to have 10 nanometer, at least till Q3 of next year.
Sweet.
If you think about it, when it comes to Intel, like, 2 quarters is not a release schedule. It's usually a year
when we see new parts. This is ridiculous. Yeah, why would they even do this?
Yeah.
So we're not...
So is Comet Lake S just a stopgap? Like the Radeon 7? Why even release it if it's... If you are actually releasing 10 nanometer in Q3, why even release this in Q1?
Why release Comet Lake in 2000? I don't know.
In 2020? Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Like, I don't know.
In 2019, like, that doesn't... What? Intel. This is what happens when you can't make your parts work.
Yeah, so if you're waiting for 10 nanometer, it's not going to come till... At least according to these leaked slides... at least until Q3 2020, if not longer. And that's a long time to wait. And that's a long time. Even Q1 2020 for the next thing that Intel comes out with, which we heard is the... how many cores are in that? 12-core?
Yeah.
Part? Or is 10-core? 10-core, I'm sorry. You're not even going to see those until Q1. So from till Q1 2020... AMD basically has free reign on saying we have the most cores on mainstream, blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean?
Well, they have the most productive mainstream part, period.
Yeah.
When it comes, yeah. They don't have the fastest process, but...
I would hope that these were old and that we see something, and around holiday makes sense for Intel. That makes sense to me for Intel.
We were... But we are getting in Q1, remember, we are getting Intel GPU.
Yeah.
So,
which is going to be a low end part.
Yeah, but they are going to make a really big deal about it. They aren't going to want to take attention away from it. So that it's the 10900, right? K is going to be their new fast part.
Yeah, and they couple that with their GPU. I don't know.
Right.
This is just all not soon enough for me.
Again, it should be coming out very shortly. The lifespan on this Comet Lake launch is going to be very brief. Comet Lake S is indeed 10 nanometer in the fall, like, why on earth would you can't wait 6 months?
Yeah.
Like, for should be a giant change.
A massive leap in everything, in that where you, as we talked about on last week's podcast, that you could knock AMD out of the water with, possibly.
Yeah.
How
close AMD has left it, like, you could totally take it right back. Like, if the 10-core part can outperform the 12-core part, like, well, which that one probably won't, but, well, what's the, are we looking at 12-core part then, probably, with Comet Lake S? In quotes,
Comet Lake S is the 14 nanometer plus.
Oh, I thought that was. Yes. Oh, Ice Lake is the 10
after
nanometer. Oh,
after yeah. after Comet Lake S is 10 nanometer.
That's where I'm getting confused. With
yeah,
this.
So I would assume you're going to see, with the 10 nanometer, you're going to see at least 10 core, if not 12 to 16. I would think. You would think, but it's Intel. So you don't know. But this is just very disappointing because, one, you would think Intel would have a, not reaction, but they would have something like, okay, AMD, you can have your little run for a couple months, and then here's Comet Lake S, where our 10-core part will outperform your 16-core part, yeah. Right? Or your 12-core. Your 12-core, yeah, your 12-core. You know, and AMD has their 16-core coming in September. Like, you know, so...
Maybe that's why, because they know it's going... They know they're going... It's they're going to get dominated anyway, so they're just not...
I don't know, but then why release late? Like, why don't you just put it out now
and get a like, run with it?
Get like some type of PR until the next thing. Like Q1 just seems way too late for me for 14 nanometer plus PCI Express 3.0.
Yeah, it's still running on. Jeez.
Yeah. So yeah, I don't know. Again, these are leak slides. There's nothing confirmed, but if this is true, it's very sad. And AMD is just gonna have like a year run.
Yeah, I also want to point out that I think whoever is building AMD's slideshows is using Windows 95. This looks...
You mean Intel?
Or Intel, yeah, excuse me, Intel slides.
They all look like this for the most part.
This looks terrible.
They all look... All these red maps look pretty much the same.
This one looks bad to me.
Yeah. This is like their internal deal or whatever. Yeah, this is not like their...
You still do better.
Yeah, I have the ones that they send out with like their chips, like the press ones, and those ones look nice. But yeah. Anywho, back to gaming stuff. Okay. Of course, the Epic Game Store has been the circle of controversy since it was announced. not only, you know, giving developers more, saying that Steam's not doing a great job, blah, 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 all this stuff, doing the exclusives, pissing people off. But the biggest thing is that you can do all that stuff and piss people off, but in my opinion, you need to have a good product. And some of the main features that you would want that are in Steam are not in the Epic Game Store yet. And that's kind of a big deal. In my opinion, they launched way too early. But I guess they just kind of had to do it, you know.
I mean, it's sort of working somewhere for them.
Yeah. But what they've done after feedback from a lot of people is that they have a public Trello kind of like progress of the Epic Game Store and what they're working on. So they have it in these columns, like near term, 1 to 3 months, midterm, 4 to 6 months, long term, 6 months. So like, as a gamer, you can kind of see what's coming, right? You can see what's coming from the Epic Game Store. Mm-hmm. So it looks like one of the biggest requested features is cloud saves. Cloud saves are great. One of the best things about Steam is that if I'm gaming on my main PC and maybe I've got my laptop, I can leave off where I left off on my main PC. That's what cloud save is. It saves it to the cloud. Mm-hmm. So, you know, or I just, completely rebuild my system or reinstall Windows. I don't want to have to play through everything I already played through. So cloud saves is huge. So it looks like cloud saves are coming. Their target is to get them out by the end of July, which would be a huge thing, I think, you know. And I think making this public, like this Trello board public,
it's a big deal.
It's a big deal. It kind of shows what they're working on and stuff like that.
To put this out there, like, places some responsibility and, like, I can't think of the word, but responsibility on them to, like, actually produce. It's like,
yeah, and I think these are the things we're going to deliver. More, it makes them more transparent, and, like, that brings just, like, everybody hated them.
Yeah.
And it like, kind of just brings some of, like, okay,
which
like,
is weird because
they're working.
Epic Games is kind of cool as a company, and then the store comes out, and we, like, switched right over. It's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. So I like this. Some of the long-term things are achievements, an actual shopping cart, things like that, automated refunds. That's to be determined. gifting, things like that. So yeah, so like it's good to see that there's progress and things like that. I think it's good on them. So
yes.
Yeah. So I still haven't really I've gotten the free games, but I haven't really like gone on there to like actually get a game.
I haven't even gotten the free games.
I will get Borderlands 3. That is what I will get when that comes out. But besides that, yeah, that is our news for the week, guys. Coming next week, we have some cool stuff. So I will first be taking a look at an RGB mouse pad. Before you roll your eyes at me because I'm reviewing an RGB mouse pad, this one's actually really cool because it's a dual-sided mouse pad. So one side is a hard side and the other side is cloth. And I think that's awesome because depending on the game you're playing, you might want a different surface. And this gives you one mouse pad that gives you both. You just get the addition of RGB lighting because everything's RGB. So it's Cooler Masters MP860. Pretty cool mouse pad that, again, just it's dual-sided. It's cool. So again, if you're like, sometimes if you're like me and you're playing really bad one night, you're like, oh, just let me flip this thing over and maybe I'll get better at the game.
Yeah, trick yourself into thinking it's a hardware problem.
Yeah, because it's definitely
it's
not.
It's not me. It's definitely this mouse pad.
Yeah. And then I'll be taking a look at another gaming accessory. I'll be taking a look at Razer's Black Widow gaming keyboard. The 2019 version. It has their Razer green mechanical switches, which I'm a huge fan of. This is a full size keyboard, $119, RGB lighting. I'll be taking a look at that, and then finally, I'll be taking a look at a case that I've been wanting to do a build in for a while, and it's actually been sitting here for a decent amount of time. Is the Inwin A1 Plus. So this is their upgrade from their original A1, which is their mini ITX little sexy little tower thing. Mm-hmm. It has a Qi charger on top, comes with a built-in power supply, so you don't have to worry about that. Mini ITX, looks pretty cool. It comes with RGB fan as well, and RGB light strip on the bottom. So, cool little case. I'm really excited to do a build inside that. So,
love that case.
It's a great little case. So that is what I have going on. And anything tech-related you want to talk about? Anything you did this week? I worked on reviews. And bought stuff on Amazon.
Sweet. I did that. I shot some photos. And then today, Sony announced the A7 R4, which if you're a camera guy, and I mean, cameras and computers can kind of overlap, right? Somewhat.
61 megapixel
yeah. Full frame camera. It's a beast. And it's actually going to be right at the same price as the A7 R. Three nice. When they launched, so $3,500 in September, and they launched that along with some like audio accessories and stuff. It's if you're into cameras, look up the specs. It's a pretty phenomenal camera. I'm gonna be trying to save my pennies for that one, but that's as far as I'll take this conversation because you're not all. This is not the camera podcast.
Yeah. No, it looks nice. I still love Sony's design as far as their cameras. Mm-hmm. That they're not massively bulky, but at the same time, they give you know, it's a full frame camera.
This will be the best mirrorless camera on the market.
Yeah, I like it.
It also, cool thing that it does is it does pixel shift. So it'll do it's a 61 megapixel, it'll do a 240 megapixel image by moving the pixels like half of a pixel to each side using the stabilization stuff inside it, and so nice. That's just a massive photo.
That's really cool. There's a lot of stuff. I'm just like looking at it all. It looks really cool.
Yep.
So if you're a camera person, definitely check that out. And we will end things here, guys. So we will have our full show notes page that has everything that we talked about, all of the reviews and all the news articles and things like that. And of course, it's just Think Computers, all one word, on your favorite podcasting app or software. So till next week, catch you guys later.